Either way, it was another little thing that made all the companions, with the notable exception of Doc, feel uneasy. They took the trail for the first quarter mile, then veered off into the scrub. There appeared to be nothing in front of them but foliage, thick and impossible to pass, but this was illusory. The growth of bushes and small trees, shadowed by the larger trunks, had been carefully arranged to disguise another trail, this one more narrow, less well-trodden than the one they had left. It snaked away at an angle and took them deep into the forest. Perhaps these Inuit just liked to keep to themselves. They certainly didn't seem to be overly sociable types. But maybe there was another reason they hid themselves off the trail taken by those trading between the scattered settlements. They walked for just over half an hour, at a steady but not taxing pace. Suddenly, turning a corner, they reached the Inuitville. It was silent and disguised, and the first view was shocking to the companions. Shocking because it seemed to appear from nowhere, with no clue, and shocking because of its composition. Wood and log huts, sheet metal covered constructions, and cinder block huts, much like the ville they had stumbled across down on the plain, were arranged around a central point, a piece of round, open space that was scuffed and churned as though in constant use. The dwellings all faced the center, and were populated by men and women who barely looked up from their everyday tasks as the hunting party entered. The stoops of the huts saw people wash clothes, sew, butcher meat for salting and storage, and clean blasters, all without paying heed to the strangers in their midst. Except for one man, who detached himself from a group of others who were rendering the remains of what could once have been a deer for fat and bone, and walked across with a peculiar shuffle to where the hunting party was now standing.
Strange quarry.
Aye. Found them wandering about lost. Seemed friendly enough. Not so stupid as to try to draw on us anyway. Came from up there, by the volcano.
The Inuit chief, for surely he had to be, such was the quiet authority he seemed to have over the others, sniffed back a string of mucus that started to drip from his nose, and gave the companions a long perusal. He was the same height as the others, perhaps a little rounder, and certainly older. The lines around his eyes seemed to form caverns around the dark orbs that called attention to the depths. The rest of his skin was like leather, toughened by the elements, and tanned by the harsh suns of too many summers that were cold yet bright. He held up a hand in greeting.
I don't know how long you've been out here, or what you've been doing, but you don't look as though you could do it for much longer.
We've been traveling a long time, and we got ourselves a little lost. Found a ruined ville back along the way, and we're heading for somewhere a little more hospitable.
The Inuit chief looked at the hunt leader. There seemed to be an unspoken question that passed between them, at which the hunt leader shrugged. The chief fixed Ryan with a glare. His eyes narrowed.
You're on foot? Where did you come from that you got this far on foot?
Well, we...
We had a wag at one time, but the axle got broken on some ice. We had to leave it, but thought we were nearer Anchorage than we were.
Looks like you people are just real shit at directions. Lack of sense and that ain't going to get you nothing but chilled around here. Maybe you struck lucky running into my people.
I hope so.
The Inuit chief stayed silent, his eyes locked with Ryan's singular orb. Both men were trying to see into the other, to judge what they really meant by their statements. Finally, the Inuit spoke.
Okay, here's the deal. You can stay here and rest up before heading to Anchorage. We'll put you in the right direction, but you earn your keep while you're here. You hunt with us, work with us. You don't stay long and you don't make trouble. Then, everything's good.
You want our weapons?
No.
Why not?
We're quicker, tougher than you.
How do you know that?
You're tired. And I know how good my people are.
At the direction of the Inuit chief, the hunt leader and one of the women, who were almost indistinguishable from the men in build and dress, took the companions to one of the huts.
If you want to eat, meal is at sundown. We eat together here. Need to chop wood and clean livestock before then. You can start earning your keep then.
As the door closed on the companions, they found themselves alone in a log hut that had mattresses on the floor and blankets piled in one corner. The blankets and mattresses were clean, and the floor had been swept. A wood-burning stove was in one corner. There was nothing else. One window to the left of the door supplied the only light, and the only way of observing what was going on outside. J.B. walked over to the window and watched the Inuit go about their everyday tasks.
Dark night. These people have been on their own too long.
The armorer could see that some were like the hunt party, but others had more severe mutations. There were those who had no arms, just vestigial flippers. Others had more severe facial distortions, with flaps of skin where nose or mouth should be. Others were without legs, propelling themselves on sleds or carts with wheels attached. But despite this, they all seemed to be strong, and all were working. It was clear that this was a society where only the strong and adaptable survived, and all were geared toward working for a common cause, making them strong as a group as well as individuals. And yet, the taciturn nature seemed to spread throughout that group, as they went about their tasks without much need or indeed desire for conversation.
These people put the fear in me. I don't trust them.
You and me both.
Then why are we here?
You tell me what option we had. They had the drop on us, and they offered us shelter when we're in unknown territory and in need of rest.
There are a few other things that are bugging me about these people. Like, how come they're all so inbred when there are other communities around? They must have come across them in the course of hunting and trading. So why haven't they mixed it up a little to stop all those mutations? And how come they've hidden themselves away here, with no way of seeing where they are from the main trail?
Could be that they want to keep to themselves because of their beliefs. You know, like some communities believe in trying to keep their people free from outside taint. Not necessarily right, but it might explain it.
They're not where I hide. Only hide trail when don't want to be found.
Exactly. They've covered their tracks for a reason, and I've got an idea why that might be.
Which is?
Come on, Ryan. Are you telling me you didn't notice, too? The homesteads in this ville, look at the way they're constructed.
Like the ville we left behind. But that's the way they all are around here, right?
Maybe. But where we stayed last night hadn't just been smashed. There were some parts that had been taken. Maybe as replacements for what these people needed on their own buildings.
Come on, you've got no grounds for saying that other than paranoia.
No. Maybe paranoia's not such a bad thing. That ville was ripped to shreds, and this one's untouched.
But it was out in the open, and this one is hidden. Which brings me back to Jack's point. Why? Why hide where you are if you trade with other villes and are part of the chain between here and Ankh Ridge? Why be the only ville that hasn't been ripped apart?
We don't know what the other villes on the route are like, Millie. And we won't until we reach them. And maybe part of the reason for this place being hidden is to avoid being attacked by whatever's doing it.
Anyway, we don't even know for sure that this trail is all the way to Ankh Ridge or used for trade.
There's a lot of maybes and ifs in there, Millie.
Yeah, you might be right. But it just doesn't feel right. And I guess I was trying to look for reasons why. Now that I will agree with. This feels real bad.
Anything we did would be bad at this point. We've just got to try to pick our way through the minefield and hope we don't blow a leg off. At least we've got some shelter, we'll have food and rest, and we'll be ready for trouble if it comes. Yeah, at least we'll know what direction it's going to come from.
It wasn't a sentiment with which any of the companions felt reassured, but there was sense to it. Better to know your enemy than to be caught from behind. There was one other thing which had occurred to Jack, if not to the others, and which he refrained from speaking of until he knew more. Why had the hunt party which had picked them up been returning from the plains when any wildlife they would wish to hunt would be more likely to be in the territory immediately surrounding their settlement? Opting to go along with things until they could get a better idea of what was actually happening within the ville, they emerged from their cabin as the light began to fade. There was still enough time for them to join their hosts in feeding the livestock and preparing supplies of firewood for the stoves that heated the buildings. They worked mostly in silence, unwilling to talk too much among themselves, and coming up once more against the wall of taciturn silence that they had experienced on first entering the community. The work was hard. The Inuit drove at a hard pace and expected the same from their guests. Instructions were barked in that same burr that was shared seemingly by all the dwellers and made them hard to understand. Nonetheless, the companions were able to fulfill their tasks and join the ville dwellers as they queued to receive their food from the communal kitchen cabin that seemingly serviced the whole community.
Why don't people cook in their own huts? Why do you eat like this?
Food's sometimes scarce. It helps if we keep it all in one place. Cook it all in one place. Means no one hoards. And we all share and share alike. That's the way it's always been, and the only way that's right. All of you come with me.
As the chief left the cookhouse, they followed. Each figured that they were about to learn something of the community. As they had settled in his cabin, they noted that it was as sparse as their own, except for a framed print of an old map behind grimy glass that rendered it almost opaque, hanging from one wall, and an iron chest on the far side of the room. Now they waited for revelation. Except conversation didn't come easily to these people, and it was actually Doc who broke the silence, with a comment that seemed at first hearing cryptic.
Scots! I do believe I finally have it. Tell me, dear sir, what is your name? I do not believe you have graced us with it as yet.
The Inuit chief gave Doc a long, hard stare. It was as though he were trying to figure out if Doc was being funny or was just plain crazy.
Thompson. John Thompson.
Go Hoyas.
What was that?
I knew it. I knew I'd heard that accent before. And it all started to fall into place. Of course. There were stories about remote camps and expeditions where the locals and the pioneers fused in such a way. But with no media to really confirm, quite impossible to verify. But then again, by the time there were such means, the possibility of such a thing had been decreased by McLuhan, McLyon, something like that. He was a marshal. Though how a lawman found time to study such a subject in depth did not bode well for the people he was supposed to protect. Anyway, the concept of the global village, something that I always thought
Doc,
was...
Doc, shut up!
Ryan shot to his feet. The old man stopped dead and looked up at the one-eyed man in astonishment. Inside Doc's head, he was stunned that a figment of his imagination should be able to talk to him in this way. Outside of that head, it appeared as though Ryan were asserting his authority over the group. Thompson seemed impassive, but his eyes flickered across the companions. This was an interesting test of group strength and loyalty.
I do apologize. I do not know what came over me there. I think perhaps excitement that, after recent events, I found it easy to follow a train of thought. I did not mean...
It's okay, Doc. You've been through a lot of crap, and it's kind of good to have you back to talking the usual shit. But maybe this isn't the time...
Mildred had been thinking about what Doc had said, and decided that it may be the right time to reinforce some of the old man's words, because it would do him good to know he had been doing more than merely ranting, and because it may clear up a few things about their hosts.
McLuhan, Doc. Marshal McLuhan. You remembered it well, but Marshal was his name, not his rank. And he was right. Things were going toward a global village before the villagers squabbled and blew it up. Hell of a memory you've got rattling around in there.
She declined to note that McLuhan's theories had come along in the time between Doc being trawled and then ending up at the end of the 20th century. He had to have had some time to do a lot of reading while he was being used as a lab rat. Leaving that for another time or place, she went back on track.
And you were right about the accent, too. I wouldn't have placed it.
Ah, of course. That explains everything. What a silly mistake to make. A little like Wyatt Earp discovering the secret of quantum mechanics before polishing off the Dalton boys.
Thompson was staring up and down the table, his expression no longer inscrutable. Instead, he was barely suppressing his excitement. Although, given the normal stony-faced expression of his people, this was admittedly barely visible. It made Christie's spine tingle, her hair tightened so that it pulled on her scalp. The chief rose from the table and went over to the framed map.
See this? Many years before Skydark, men and women come from across the big seas. You're right. Scotland. A place called Ireland, too. They were escaping lack of jack, lack of food. They found people like me. They found we had the same problem. Out of a pan into the flame, as they said. But they had the Almighty, and the Almighty would send something.
They brought you religion instead of bread? Very big of them.
Thompson was across the table before anyone had the chance to move. For one so bulky, he moved at an incredible pace. He lunged for Doc before the other companions had a chance to move, and stopped inches short of the old man's face. Doc could taste his sour breath.
No, you old fool, you don't understand. You say smart things a lot of the time and then things that sound so stupid. How does that work, eh? Listen to me. The Almighty had guided them from starving in their lands, brought them safely across the big seas and landed them here. Sure, we all starved together to begin with, but the Almighty works with mystery. That's what they said. No one understands, but it works. Faith and trust. We have things to teach them. They have things to teach us. Things that made the hunting better. The living better. And then we became one. That's why we have their names, their voice. They gave us the Almighty, showed us the way. And through the way, the light and the truth. And now we live better. Better than others out here because we work together. Use everything, make it work, have faith.
Thompson pulled back and walked over to the map, taking the frame from the wall and placing it in the middle of the table. He seemed oblivious to the stunned silence around him. He spat onto the frame and cleaned off some of the dust and dirt from the glass, revealing underneath a map of how the Alaskan regions had once looked. The map was yellowed and stained, even under glass, and bore a date in one corner. 1879.
This was what it was like before Skydark. The travelers came over these plains of ice and around these coastal areas, moving toward the port Anchorage.
He spoke as though it was something he had learned by heart. Certainly it would have been simple to do this, as his finger followed a thinly traced dotted line that wove across the face of the paper, taking the travelers across the continent on a hesitant path until they reached the far coast, then upward to the point marked Anchorage. The fact that he mispronounced the name gave way the fact that he couldn't read and was reciting from memory.
Here they settled.
He indicated an area some 30 miles inland, a fraction of an inch on the map's surface scale.
Then Skydark came and things changed. Our old homes destroyed, the land reaching up to the skies and spitting fire back at the heavens before settling down once more. Most who still lived made deals back on the ice and rock. But we came up here.
Why? Why did they do that?
Rocks still spit fire, but down there is safer from the hot seas. Animals too. Bear, wolf, all move to warmer region. They don't have huts to save if the rocks spit again. They just run. The others don't want to have to build again, and they're scared of the wildlife chilling them. But it's warmer here, and the rocks don't spit that much, and the closer the wildlife, the easier the hunting.
So why hunt party on rock and ice when find us?
Ryan shot him a glare. They were learning something, and the one-eyed man thought Jack's question would make Thompson clam up. He was wrong. Thompson shrugged.
Sometimes we can track bear or wolf down into the plain. That's where they go to hunt. And if we follow, then it's more open. Depends on the trail we pick up.
It seemed on the face of it a reasonable answer, but there was something that didn't ring true to the albino. He would let it lie for now. Leave any further questions until later. Ryan returned to the subject of the map and pointed to the coast around Anchorage.
This is all still like it is here?
Mostly. Some of it fell off during the rock shifting after Skydark.